You might hear the word monopoly and think of the robber barons of the 19th century, monopolies that involved big steel or railroad companies. But monopolies are also alive and well in today's economy. And according to Derek Thompson of The Atlantic, they are stifling large parts of the American economy. Derek joins us from Washington. Hi, Derek.
Hi, Jeremy.
And make your case. How significant are monopolies in our economy today?
It's interesting because entrepreneurship is both booming and busting at the same time. And it really depends on your definition of entrepreneurship. If you think of startups as being equivalent to Silicon Valley apps, then obviously we hear about new ones coming online every few days or so. But the broader definition of entrepreneurship that the government looks at takes into consideration things like a new coffee shop, a new restaurant, any new establishment. And that broader definition of entrepreneurship has gone down a lot in the last 30 years at the exact same time that you've seen industry consolidation across the board. You've seen it in airlines, as everyone has become quite familiar with in terms of a handful of airlines controlling all of the flights. You see it in drugstores. You see it maybe even in restaurants, things like, you know, Starbucks moving in where a coffee shop used to be. And so some economists are beginning to connect these dots and say, you know, perhaps the decline in dynamism is happening at the exact same time as you're seeing all these extraordinarily large and profitable firms rise, because these two things are interlinked. And some businesses are growing so big that maybe like a tree in a forest, they are covering up all of the sunlight and nothing small can grow under it.
But at the same time that you have all of the monopolies that exist in the U.S., you do have some entrepreneurship in startup communities across the country, in Silicon Valley and elsewhere. Are those connected?
Right. So it's interesting. In these, it goes right back to the question of the two different kinds of entrepreneurship that we follow. The broader category includes franchises and restaurants and coffee shops and little clothing stores. But when most people think of entrepreneurship in sort of a front page headline definition, they think about stuff that's happening in San Francisco, in Silicon Valley, in Austin, in Seattle, high tech startups. And so what's happening is you are seeing, yes, in the latter category, there are lots of high tech startups. There is lots of venture capital swooshing around and helping these young entrepreneurs build these unicorns, billion-dollar companies, and better. But at the same time, a broader definition of entrepreneurship seems to be struggling at the exact same time that some companies in these sectors are getting really, really big.
How has government policy contributed to this situation in terms of laws and regulations they set regarding monopolies?
So this story really takes us back to the 19th century, to the 1800s, when the U.S. was just becoming an industrial powerhouse. And it was America's first small business owners, really. It was farmers who pushed for the government to intervene against trust because they said that the people who owned the railroad lines, a handful of railroad magnates were dominating the railroad lines and making it really expensive to move commerce. So Congress passed the Sherman Antitrust Act. And for the next 20 years, really, you had sort of a heyday of trust busting. You had people arguing that when companies get too big, they don't just dominate their own industries. It was Justice Louis Brandeis who said in 1933 that they monopolized political power as well. So for a while, you really had a very active community of people trying to make sure the companies did not grow too big for the economy's own good. But in the late 1970s, 1980s, you had a handful of conservatives led by Robert Bork, who argued that one thing that was happening was that the government was fetishizing competition, essentially, and they were leveling the playing field for the benefit of companies that were really poorly run. And these conservative reformists, they essentially said companies can be big if they produce cheap products, if they are consumer friendly. And the fear now, 30, 40 years later, is that even though you do have a lot of companies, like, say, a Walmart, that's very good at keeping prices low for consumers, there might be other negative externalities of its bigness. Like, for example, the fact that they don't have to pay their employees that much. Like, for the fact that you see less original retail stores or clothing outlets or restaurants. And so they're beginning to sort of tie together these two forces, the bigness of these companies and the lack of froth in the economy.
So you've laid out the problem. Is there a solution to this? Is Washington working on one? Does it divide along party lines?
This is an issue that has not received a lot of attention in the last few years, and until about maybe 6 months ago, a year ago, really wasn't receiving much attention at all. Senator Elizabeth Warren recently gave a speech that said that this should be at the heart of the next administration's public policy. One very interesting and important fact to note is that if, for example, Hillary Clinton became the next president, as our former interviewer slightly predicted, if she becomes the next president in a divided Congress, the Republican Congress is not going to want to do a whole lot. But rewriting antitrust regulation is something that the administration can do all on its own. And so it might be the perfect sort of policy to have in a divided government for the foreseeable future.
That's Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. And we'll link you to his piece about monopolies in America, alive and well, at hereandnow.org. Derek, thanks.
Thank you.